D Major Networks. The understanding of brain networks has transformed how neurofeedback is approached. Historically, neurofeedback targeted specific scalp locations that corresponded to discrete Brodmann areas thought to be responsible for particular psychological functions. This approach assumed an isolated function in these regions. However, contemporary neuroscience recognizes that cognitive and emotional functions are products of dynamic interactions across interconnected brain networks. These networks operate across multiple timescales and include both structural connections, physical axonal pathways, and functional connections, synchronous activity between regions. Functional networks represent areas that activate in concert during specific tasks or rest. In contrast, structural networks consist of anatomical links, such as white matter tracts. The two do not always map neatly onto each other. For example, regions may show functional connectivity without direct structural pathways due to indirect modulation or shared inputs. The evolution in understanding connectivity has prompted a shift in neurofeedback from single-site training to connectivity training. The goal is now to modulate communication within and between networks to improve performance or alleviate symptoms. These shifts are supported by technological advancements in EEG and fMRI that allow the measurement of both static and dynamic brain connectivity. Connectivity is not static. It adapts with experience, injury, and intervention. For example, casting a healthy limb alters motor network connectivity within days. This responsiveness underlies neurofeedback's potential to retrain maladaptive networks. Training protocols now increasingly target functional integration across regions, rather than simple amplitude changes at isolated sites. The role of normative databases is critical here. Quantitative EEG, QEEG databases provide a statistical comparison of an individual's brain activity to a normative population. These comparisons identify network disruptions and suggest specific targets for intervention. Such information guides clinicians in tailoring connectivity-based training to individual needs. The success of this network approach hinges on understanding the functional anatomy that underpins human cognition. Understanding and engaging with major brain networks is crucial for effective neurofeedback interventions. These include attention systems, affective circuits, motor pathways, and higher-order executive networks. Each comprises distributed nodes working in concert. For instance, attention is regulated by both the dorsal and ventral attention networks, which dynamically interact to shift focus based on internal goals or external stimuli. Moreover, network dysfunction is increasingly linked to various psychological and neurological disorders. Depression, ADHD, PTSD, and TBI often involve disordered connectivity. Neurofeedback seeks to normalize these patterns, restoring adaptive function. Finally, the brain's networks do not operate in isolation. Their interplay enables complex behaviors, from social interaction to creative problem solving. The remainder of this lecture explores the foundational concepts and key components of these networks. We will examine neurofeedback's paradigm shift, functional brain anatomy, Brodmann areas, and the specific cortical and subcortical systems that regulate attention. Each section builds toward a comprehensive understanding of how connectivity training can enhance both clinical outcomes and human performance. A neurofeedback paradigm shift. Neurofeedback began with the premise that individual electrode sites should be targeted for uptraining or downtraining based on clinical symptoms and anatomical knowledge. The rationale was simple. If a specific region is underactive or overactive, modulate it directly. This method helped establish early protocols and remains effective in some conditions. However, it falls short in addressing the complexity of distributed brain functions. The recognition that brain regions do not operate in isolation has reoriented this model. Every cortical site is connected to many others, forming complex communication networks. Whether we train with EEG or fMRI, we must account for these connections. For example, altering activity in the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex influences downstream regions involved in emotional regulation, attention, and memory. Networks can be structural or functional. Structural networks are defined by white matter tracks, bundles of axons connecting regions. Functional networks are defined by correlated activity across regions during tasks or rest. Notably, functional connectivity does not always mirror structural pathways. It reflects synchrony, not direct wiring. Connectivity-based interventions are designed to modify these relationships. Neurofeedback can increase or decrease synchrony between areas depending on clinical needs. A depressed client might need stronger connectivity between prefrontal and limbic areas. Someone with ADHD might benefit from improved synchronization in attention-related networks. The flexibility of this approach is its strength. Scientific studies have confirmed that even passive interventions like limb immobilization can rapidly change connectivity. In one study, participants wore a cast on their dominant hand. Within days, the functional communication between motor cortices was dramatically altered. These findings support the claim that neurofeedback can induce rapid neuroplasticity. Connectivity training enables us to harness this plasticity intentionally. By measuring the functional interactions between brain regions, clinicians can identify aberrant communication patterns. Training then targets specific links rather than nodes, aiming to normalize patterns that support adaptive cognition and emotion. Normative QEG databases help determine which network relationships deviate from typical development or functioning. Rather than working in isolation, clinicians can compare a client's connectivity to a reference model. This enhances precision and personalizes intervention. The shift from single-site training to connectivity training reflects a broader transformation in neuroscience. Brain health is increasingly seen as a function of integration, not activation. The neurofeedback paradigm shift allows us to target this integration directly, fostering recovery, development, and optimal performance. Common sense about functional brain areas. Understanding the functional architecture of the brain requires us to abandon simplistic notions. The idea that there is a tennis forehand area or a language center reflects a misunderstanding of how functions are distributed across networks. While certain brain areas contribute more to particular functions, no single region is solely responsible for complex tasks. Functions like language, memory, or attention emerge from coordinated activity in multiple regions. This principle challenges the localizationist view, which assumes that specific psychological processes are confined to isolated brain structures. Peterson and Fies remind us that functions are distributed, yet the contribution of each area is specific and essential. For instance, while Broca's area is involved in speech production, it cannot produce speech in isolation. It relies on sensory input, motor planning, and executive regulation from other areas. The architecture of these networks reflects both specialization and integration. Specialization allows regions to process certain types of information efficiently. Integration ensures that outputs from one region are contextually modulated by others. For example, the visual cortex processes visual input, but interpreting those inputs requires integration with memory, emotion, and language systems. This distributed architecture is particularly evident in attention and executive function. No single region governs these processes. Rather, they emerge from the dynamic interplay between prefrontal, parietal, and subcortical regions. Such processes require timing, coordination, and adaptability hallmarks of network-based operation. Furthermore, depending on task demands and context, the same brain area may contribute to multiple networks. This reusability is a hallmark of efficient biological systems. The dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, for example, may engage in attention, memory, or emotional regulation, depending on which networks it is integrated into at any given time. Functional roles can also shift with learning and plasticity. Brain areas can adapt to new functions when trained or after injury. Neurofeedback leverages this adaptability by training regions within the context of their network affiliations. This is why network training is more effective than training isolated sites. It aligns with the brain's natural organization. In clinical practice, this perspective has important implications. Treating attention deficits by training only one site misses the distributed nature of attentional control. Similarly, targeting depression requires addressing the interplay between cognitive, emotional, and autonomic networks. Effective interventions must reflect the common sense understanding that brain functions are widely distributed but precisely coordinated. In summary, complex cognitive and emotional functions are not localized but distributed across hierarchically organized, interconnected brain areas. Each region contributes in a specific yet interdependent manner. This realization has reshaped how we design and deliver neurofeedback protocols, prioritizing connectivity, integration, and individualized training plans. Key anatomical terms. A solid grasp of directional and anatomical terminology is essential to navigate the brain effectively. The brain's complex structure is often described using orientation terms borrowed from anatomy. Anterior or rostral indicates a direction toward the front of the brain, while posterior or caudal points toward the back. Dorsal refers to the top and ventral denotes the bottom. These directional terms help us describe the locations of brain structures in three-dimensional space. Two structural features dominate the brain's surface, gyri and sulci. A gyrus, plural gyri, is a raised ridge of cortical tissue, while a sulcus, plural sulci, is a groove or furrow between two gyri. These folds increase the surface area of the cerebral cortex, allowing more neurons to fit within the limited volume of the skull. Understanding their layout helps locate functional areas and map networks across the brain's convoluted surface. Neuroanatomical terms also extend to networks. For instance, the dorsal attention network is so named because its components are found on the frontal and parietal lobes' upper dorsal surfaces. Similarly, the ventral attention network lies along these regions' lower ventral aspects. These labels combine directional and functional information to describe a network's anatomical position and cognitive role. Accurate anatomical terminology enhances communication among researchers, clinicians, and educators. It provides a shared vocabulary that supports the interpretation of brain imaging and neurofeedback data. Mislabeling a brain region can lead to incorrect assumptions about its function or network affiliation. Consistency in using these terms ensures clarity and scientific rigor. Some structures appear in multiple networks, and knowing their precise location helps differentiate their roles. For example, the anterior cingulate cortex spans both affective and cognitive domains. Referring to its dorsal versus ventral portions adds specificity that informs both diagnosis and treatment planning. Brain atlases often use coordinate systems to identify regions. The Talleyrac and the Montreal Neurological Institute, MNI, spaces are two major systems. These coordinate systems offer standardized references for comparing brain activity across individuals and studies. Regions are defined by X, Y, and Z coordinates, facilitating exact localization. Understanding these anatomical conventions is not optional for clinicians using neurofeedback, but is vital. Protocols often specify electrode placements using the International 10-10-20 system, which correlates scalp locations with underlying cortical areas. Interpreting connectivity maps and QEEG data requires fluency in neuroanatomical language. Ultimately, anatomical literacy is a foundation for working with brain networks. It allows us to identify the nodes within a network, track their interactions, and develop targeted interventions. By mastering these terms, clinicians and researchers can move beyond superficial observations to deep, meaningful engagement with the brain's functional architecture. Brodmann areas. The Brodmann areas are among the earliest systematic attempts to divide the cerebral cortex based on cellular architecture. Developed by Corbini and Brodmann in the early 20th century, this system identified 47 regions based on differences in how neurons were layered and distributed using a method called Neisel staining. Each area was assigned a number, and these labels have since become a familiar shorthand in neuroanatomy. Although initially a structural classification, Brodmann areas are now often used functionally. helping clinicians and researchers reference brain regions involved in particular tasks or symptoms. Despite their historical value, Brodmann areas lack the specificity required by modern neuroscience. Functional imaging has revealed that many areas are too large and encompass multiple subregions with distinct roles. For example, Brodmann Area 6 includes both the supplementary motor area and the premotor cortex, functionally different regions involved in motor planning and execution. Thus, while Brodmann areas offer a convenient map, they are often underparcelated compared to contemporary brain atlases. Modern neuroimaging studies have led to more granular parcellation schemes. One prominent update is the Glasser and colleagues 2016 map, which identifies 180 cortical regions in each hemisphere, 100 of which were previously unrecognized. These refined divisions are based on a combination of structural, functional, and connectivity data, offering a richer, more accurate depiction of cortical organization. Even so, Brodmann areas remain embedded in the lexicon of neuroscience because of their historical role and widespread recognition. Each Brodmann area plays a part in one or more functional networks. For instance, areas 9 and 46 are part of the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex and are heavily involved in working memory and executive function. Area 17 corresponds to the primary visual cortex, which is crucial for processing incoming visual information. The participation of each area in broader networks emphasizes the distributed nature of brain function and supports the shift to network-based training in neurofeedback. Knowing Brodmann area functions helps clinicians target specific circuits. Area 24 in the ventral anterior cingulate cortex is implicated in emotional regulation and is often overactive in depression. Areas 44 and 45 form Broca's area, which involves speech production and language processing. Identifying dysregulation in these regions can inform QEEG-based neurofeedback protocols aiming to normalize their activity or connectivity. Brodmann area mapping also aids in interpreting EEG and source localization techniques. Tools like Loretta and Saloretta use anatomical atlases to estimate the origin of electrical activity in the brain. These methods often express results in Brodmann area numbers, enabling clinicians to quickly associate abnormalities with known functional roles and select corresponding training strategies. Despite limitations, Brodmann areas are a useful interface between older anatomical models and modern connectivity science. They provide a bridge for integrating historical knowledge with emerging neurofeedback and cognitive neuroscience technologies. Their continued use in clinical and research settings testifies to their practical utility, even as more refined systems evolve. As a training and communication tool, Brodmann areas help clinicians, researchers, and educators speak a shared language. While imperfect, their simplicity and familiarity make them accessible. Understanding their scope and limits ensures they are used appropriately and supplemented with more detailed atlases when precision is critical. This blended approach strengthens the clinical application of neurofeedback and enhances our ability to describe complex brain functions. Brain organization and dynamics. The brain is organized into a vast network of functional and anatomical systems that operate across different spatial and temporal scales. These systems do not work in isolation, but communicate through integrated activity loops. Functional networks are built from transient assemblies of neurons, which are coordinated by oscillatory discharges that we can record using electroencephalography, EEG. These oscillations are not random. They form rhythmic patterns, synchronizing activity across different brain regions to facilitate cognition, emotion, and behavior. Oscillatory activity defines how brain regions coordinate. For example, alpha rhythms, 8 to 12 hertz, are associated with relaxed wakefulness and sensory inhibition, while beta rhythms, 13 to 30 hertz, support active thinking and focused attention. These rhythms represent the state of local networks and their ability to coordinate with distant regions. The brain leverages this rhythmic structure to organize perception, memory, and motor responses into coherent behavioral states. The interaction of local and global networks forms a hierarchy of information processing. Local networks handle sensory or motor-specific tasks, such as processing visual stimuli or coordinating finger movements. These local computations are then integrated by global networks, which contextualize the input with emotional valence, executive control, and experience. The interplay between these layers is critical for adaptive behavior. Among the most influential global networks is the frontoparietal network. It functions as a flexible hub that orchestrates the activation of different subsystems depending on the task at hand. For example, when learning a new skill, this network assigns functions to the motor system, sensory system, and memory circuits, coordinating their activity to form a coherent behavior sequence. This dynamic adaptability allows humans to handle novel tasks and switch strategies on the fly. Content specialization exists across these networks. Some networks are tuned for emotional salience, others for sensory processing, and others for motor execution. These specialized systems interact through bidirectional signaling, often mediated by subcortical structures, such as the thalamus or basal ganglia. These relay centers help synchronize cortical activity and shape how incoming information is interpreted and acted upon. Neurofeedback seeks to harness these dynamic interactions to improve brain function. By measuring the electrical signatures of these networks, clinicians can target specific patterns for training. For instance, if a person has poor attention, training might focus on enhancing communication within the dorsal attention network and between prefrontal and parietal areas. The goal is not simply to amplify or suppress activity, but to restore functional harmony among interconnected regions. The brain's ability to reorganize itself, known as neuroplasticity, supports this approach. Patterns of dysregulation, such as those found in depression or ADHD, reflect maladaptive network dynamics. Neurofeedback uses guided plasticity to reshape these patterns, enabling the brain to regain flexibility and stability. This process is iterative, requiring repeated feedback and reinforcement to instill durable changes. Ultimately, understanding brain organization as a system of interacting networks empowers clinicians and researchers to move beyond reductionist models. It emphasizes integration over isolation, coordination over control, and systems-level thinking over symptom-level intervention. This perspective sets the stage for advanced interventions that align with the true complexity of the human brain. Network overview. The brain's networks are highly specialized systems coordinating different functions, ranging from eye movement to emotion regulation. Understanding these systems is essential for interpreting behavior and designing targeted neurofeedback interventions. Each network comprises specific brain regions that work together to accomplish a particular function. Although distinct in their primary roles, these networks often overlap and interact, reflecting the complexity and integration of human brain function. One of the most well-known is the oculomotor network, which includes the frontal eye field, FEF, dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, posterior parietal cortex, basal ganglia, and thalamus. This system orchestrates voluntary eye movements and attention shifts. It suppresses reflexive movements toward distractions and allows us to redirect our focus to previously relevant spatial locations. These functions are crucial for sustained attention and visual tracking, which are often targeted in attentional neurofeedback protocols. The motor network coordinates voluntary physical actions. It involves the supplementary motor area, SMA, premotor cortex, primary motor cortex, sensory motor cortex, and cerebellum. These areas interact to plan, initiate, and regulate muscle contractions. Motor-related neurofeedback often targets sensory motor rhythm, SMR activity to enhance motor control, improve focus, and manage conditions like epilepsy or ADHD. These networks illustrate how physiological regulation can be trained to affect both behavior and performance. Recent research has identified the somatocognitive action network, SCAN, which integrates movement with cognition and physiology. It includes regions within the primary motor cortex, SMA, thalamic nuclei, posterior putamen, and cerebellum. This network is thought to mediate complex actions such as speech and tool use. The scan provides a powerful substrate for understanding the brain-body connection between health and disease by linking posture, breathing, and arousal to behavioral goals. The affective network is pivotal in emotional regulation, linking the prefrontal cortex with limbic structures like the amygdala and cingulate cortex. It allows individuals to process, interpret, and modulate emotional responses. Neurofeedback protocols aimed at emotional disorders, such as anxiety or depression, often target this network to balance emotional reactivity and promote psychological resilience. Affective dysfunctions are frequently visible in abnormal EEG patterns, such as excessive beta activity or suppressed alpha. The Central Autonomic Network, CAN, regulates involuntary physiological functions, including heart rate, respiration, and digestion. It involves regions like the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, insula, hypothalamus, and brainstem. This system maintains homeostasis and coordinates stress responses. Heart rate variability, biofeedback, often paired with neurofeedback, targets this network to enhance parasympathetic tone and resilience to stress. Its integration with emotional and cognitive systems highlights the inseparability of mind and body. The social network governs complex behaviors such as empathy, judgment, and interpersonal communication. Key structures include the orbitofrontal cortex, superior temporal sulcus, and anterior cingulate cortex. It also overlaps with the mentalizing and mirror networks, which support our ability to understand others' mental states and intentions. Social cognition deficits in conditions like autism spectrum disorder or schizophrenia are often linked to disruptions in this network. Neurofeedback targeting social brain regions holds promise in enhancing social functioning and emotional intelligence. Finally, the executive network manages higher-order processes like decision-making, problem-solving, and behavioral regulation. It is anchored in the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex and supports cognitive flexibility, inhibition, and working memory. Dysregulation here is implicated in ADHD, OCD, and other disorders involving cognitive control. Training this network can enhance academic, occupational, and therapeutic outcomes by strengthening sustained attention and self-regulation. Attentional processes. Attention allows us to filter and prioritize information, shaping perception, memory, and action. It can be directed voluntarily, as when reading a book, or involuntarily, as when startled by a loud noise. In neuroscience, attention is divided into two broad systems, top-down endogenous and bottom-up exogenous attention. Top-down attention reflects goal-directed focus, while salient stimuli drive bottom-up attention. These systems are supported by anatomically and functionally distinct yet interconnected networks. The dorsal attention network, DAN, orchestrates voluntary, sustained attention. It includes regions like the frontal eye field, HF, and intraparietal sulcus, IPS. This network activates when we consciously direct our attention, such as scanning a crowded room for a familiar face. It is essential for tasks that require planning, anticipation, and cognitive effort. Training this network can improve focus and reduce distractibility, making it a target for ADHD interventions. In contrast, the ventral attention network, VAN, manages automatic stimulus-driven attention. It includes the temporoparietal junction, TPJ, and ventral frontal cortex. This system becomes active when unexpected events capture our awareness, such as a sudden movement or sound. It functions as a circuit breaker, interrupting ongoing processes to redirect attention toward new, potentially important information. The coordination between DAN and VAN enables flexible attention. The DAN maintains task goals while the VAN monitors the environment for novel stimuli. When needed, the VAN signals the DAN to reorient attention. This dynamic interaction supports complex behaviors such as driving a car, engaging in conversation, or navigating unfamiliar environments. Disruptions in this interplay can lead to attentional disorders and cognitive inefficiency. Subcortical structures also contribute to attention. The superior colliculus, located in the midbrain, helps direct gaze and attention to salient visual stimuli. The pulvinar nucleus of the thalamus acts as a gatekeeper, filtering information and enhancing relevant signals. These structures collaborate with cortical networks to ensure attention is precise and adaptable. Neurofeedback can train attentional networks by reinforcing patterns of activity associated with sustained focus and reduced impulsivity. For example, increasing sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, over the central cortex is known to enhance attention and reduce hyperactivity. Neurofeedback promotes more stable and efficient attention-related processing by targeting the brain's electrical rhythms. EEG biomarkers of attention include increased beta activity in frontal regions and decreased theta activity, which is often elevated in individuals with attentional impairments. These patterns can be monitored and modified through feedback, providing a non-invasive method to enhance attentional control. The effects are not limited to clinical populations. Even high-performing individuals may benefit from refined attention training. Ultimately, attentional processes are foundational to cognition. They enable learning, memory, social interaction, and emotional regulation. Disruptions in attention can cascade into broader cognitive and emotional challenges. By understanding and training attentional networks, we not only improve focus, but also enhance overall brain function and quality of life. Two cortical networks regulate attention. Two central cortical networks are pivotal in attention regulation: the salience network and the default mode network, DMN. Each contributes uniquely to how we allocate cognitive resources, process salient information, and maintain or shift attentional focus. Their interaction determines whether we are effectively focused, distracted by irrelevant stimuli, or preoccupied with internal thoughts. The salience network, called the mid-cingulo-insular network, includes the anterior insula and dorsal anterior cingulate cortex. It functions as an attentional switchboard, detecting relevant stimuli from both internal and external environments and directing attention accordingly. When something important arises, such as a sudden sound, a memory, or a change in physiological state, the salience network activates to reorient cognitive resources. The anterior insula plays a key integrative role. It processes interoceptive signals, such as heartbeat and breath, emotional responses, and sensory input, coordinating them into a coherent perception of salience. This region acts as a hub, communicating with executive, affective, and default mode networks to prioritize what the brain attends to next. When dysregulated, this system may either fail to respond to important stimuli or overreact to trivial ones. The dorsal anterior cingulate cortex, DACC, another major component of the salience network, helps initiate appropriate behavioral responses. It monitors for conflict, detects errors, and triggers cognitive control when needed. For example, during a difficult task, the DACC sustains attention and inhibits distractions. This ability is vital for problem-solving, learning, and goal-directed behavior. In contrast, the default mode network, DMN, is active when the brain is at rest or engaged in introspective processes. It includes the medial prefrontal cortex, posterior cingulate cortex, angular gyrus, and hippocampal regions. The DMN supports functions such as autobiographical memory, self-referential thought, future planning, and social cognition. While often seen as opposing task-focused attention, the DMN provides critical context and meaning. Effective attention requires modulation of DMN activity. During task engagement, the salience network suppresses DMN activity to allow executive and attention networks to dominate. This deactivation allows cognitive resources to be redirected toward external tasks. However, excessive DMN activity during tasks is associated with mind wandering, inattention, and reduced performance. Neurofeedback can be used to modulate the balance between these two systems. For instance, protocols that train frontal midline theta, or SMR, may help shift dominance from the DMN to the salience and executive networks. Such training enhances sustained attention and task performance while reducing distractibility and ruminative thought. The dynamic interplay between the salience network and the DMN governs how we transition between internal and external focus. When functioning optimally, this interplay allows for responsive, goal-directed cognition. Disruptions in this balance, however, underlie a variety of mental health and attentional disorders. Understanding and training these networks offers a powerful approach to enhancing attentional regulation and overall mental flexibility. The pulvinar mediates attentional shifts. The pulvinar nucleus of the thalamus plays a critical role in attentional regulation by acting as a filter for visual and multisensory information. Located in the posterior region of the thalamus, it serves as a hub between sensory processing regions and higher-order cortical areas. Its function is to enhance relevant information while suppressing distractions, thus optimizing the allocation of attentional resources. This capacity to modulate information flow gives the pulvinar a gatekeeping role in attentional networks. The pulvinar receives input from the retina and superior colliculus and projects to widespread cortical areas, including the visual cortex, parietal cortex, and prefrontal cortex. These connections allow it to coordinate sensory input with cognitive demands. During tasks that require high attentional control, the pulvinar shows increased activity, helping the brain focus on task-relevant stimuli and ignore competing distractions. This makes it an essential component in both goal-directed and reflexive attention. Importantly, the pulvinar is involved in both bottom-up and top-down attention. In bottom-up attention, it helps amplify unexpected or novel sensory input, alerting cortical systems to potentially important stimuli. In top-down attention, it supports the sustained focus directed by higher-order cognitive regions. Its dual involvement enables smooth transitions between internally and externally directed attention. Functional imaging studies confirm that the pulvinar becomes more active when individuals perform tasks in the presence of distractions. For instance, if a person tries to identify a target among multiple irrelevant stimuli, pulvinar activation correlates with successful attentional filtering. This supports the idea that it helps prioritize visual processing in a competitive sensory environment. Damage or dysfunction in the pulvinar is associated with deficits in attentional shifting and filtering. Patients with lesions in this region may struggle to disengage from one stimulus and shift attention to another. These impairments reflect the pulvinar's role in enabling flexible and dynamic attentional control. Understanding its function is particularly important in conditions such as ADHD, traumatic brain injury, and neglect syndrome. The pulvinar also coordinates with the dorsal and ventral attention networks to determine where attention should be directed. It acts as a relay that facilitates communication between cortical and subcortical systems. This integration ensures that sensory inputs are interpreted in context and that attention is deployed efficiently across time and space. Neurofeedback protocols that enhance attentional control may indirectly influence pulvinar function by modulating the networks it supports. For instance, improving alpha regulation in parietal and occipital regions could enhance the brain's ability to gate visual information. Though not typically a direct target of EEG neurofeedback, the pulvinar's activity reflects the functional success of broader attentional training strategies. As neuroscience continues to uncover the pulvinar's integrative role, it becomes clear that attentional regulation is not solely a cortical function. The thalamus, and the pulvinar in particular, bridges sensory input with cognitive output, ensuring that attention remains adaptive, efficient, and aligned with our goals. Its centrality in attentional control makes it a compelling area for further study and clinical application. Conclusion. This lecture has examined the transition from site-specific neurofeedback to a more nuanced, network-based approach. Traditional models that focus on discrete Brodmann areas give way to strategies that recognize the brain's functional architecture as interconnected, dynamic, and distributed. Neurofeedback now seeks not just to modulate individual regions, but also to train communication and coordination between them. This shift reflects both scientific advances and clinical necessity, as we grapple with complex, multidimensional conditions that cannot be explained by simple localization. We have explored the common sense understanding that attention, emotion, and motor planning rely on distributed processing. Each brain area contributes to a larger network whose configuration and timing determine performance and experience. Brodmann areas remain useful for mapping and communication, but modern research has expanded our anatomical vocabulary with updated parcellations and connectivity models. The review of key networks, including attentional, affective, autonomic, motor, social, and executive circuits, highlights the richness of brain dynamics. These systems coordinate to produce coherent behavior, and their dysfunction is implicated in a wide range of neuropsychological disorders. Neurofeedback protocols now aim to train these systems holistically, recognizing that activation, deactivation, and connectivity all play vital roles. We also considered the interplay between the salience network and the default mode network, which enables transitions between internal and external focus. The attentional system's precision is further supported by subcortical structures such as the pulvinar, which filters and prioritizes incoming stimuli. This complex orchestration of cortical and subcortical processes underscores the integrative nature of cognitive control. In closing, network-informed neurofeedback represents a paradigm shift that aligns with the evolving understanding of brain function. It enables clinicians and researchers to move beyond simple symptom management toward targeted, personalized interventions. By training connectivity patterns and system dynamics, we can help individuals restore adaptive functioning, improve performance, and enhance well-being. As we continue to refine our knowledge, the promise of neurofeedback lies in its ability to translate network science into meaningful clinical outcomes.